That was the introductory reading for our brother Mac, and we'll call him forward now to speak to us on God's Vine, the Old Testament study. Brother Mac.
Good evening, everyone. We got off with a good start. That's okay. It's when Sean vanished from the screen, it reminded me of a dream that I have quite often. I'm giving an illustrated talk, and which I thought was going over quite well. And then when I opened my eyes and the lights went back on, the whole audience had disappeared. And I've been talking to myself, which I do quite often. Anyhow, thanks, Sean, for stepping in for the presiding, and Mike stepping in. That's good. That's always nice to have brethren that way, capable of doing this for us. So good evening, everyone, young and old. And we hope you've had a good day, and that you've come a little closer to your God in some small way, either in the things that you've observed or you've read or conversation with other people. Because this is the main object of my Bible class talk, when I will be speaking to you on the vine, referred to or spoken to us in the Old Testament and in the New Testament. I'm sure that we all realize that we can never plumb the depth of the knowledge and the understanding of our God. Just think for a moment what we're dealing with and what we're trying to achieve. The God that we worship is the great creator of the heavens and the earth. This God that we worship is everlasting to everlasting. This God has created all things, great and small. This God has created things that man just cannot comprehend in their own eyes. And this God that we worship is truly the creator of the heavens and the earth. And so we look upon the history of our world, and we comprehend its history. And we remember in the beginning of Genesis, it recorded the formation of creation. And we realize then that as we go through scriptures, we have an indication given to us from God that he found great pleasure in taking hold of this planet Earth and develop it into something beautiful and fashionable to look upon. And so he created all these wonderful things. Some of you are on the Discovery Channel. Well, because of the skills and because of the equipment and invention that we have today, we can go into into the depths of the seas, and we can see the wonders of all the sea world, all the different colors and different creatures there. Things create this way. So God has clothed our world with a beautiful garment. And with this, he wants to not isolate it to himself, but he wants to share it with the creatures of his handiwork, those that come forth to live upon the earth from Adam onwards. And so in this direction, he realizes that he wants to share the beautiful things that he has created and fashioned, that they might be used to bring people to him. And so when we go through the scriptures, we see when we go into the Psalms, and one of my favorite Psalms, I always like to associate myself with David the Psalmist. It is said of David the Psalmist that he was a man after God's own heart. And when you go into the Psalms and you read some of the Psalms written by David, you see that this man, this who was the king of Israel, this man who tried to live a godly life but failed on many a time, but as it says in this, the Psalm, the Psalm 42, that we've had sung this evening, it says in there, he speaks, as pants the hart for calling stream, when heated in the chase, so long my soul, O God, for thee,
and thy refreshing grace. And then he goes on to say, for thee, my God, the living God, my thirsty soul doth pine. And so we have this man recognized as the king of Israel, a man favored of a God, but he realized the limitation of his, of knowing his God. And so every day, he has his poetical language in that Psalm 42, the poetical language reads that he chased after knowing God like the young deer in the calling stream. For thee, my God, the living God, my thirsty soul doth pine. So this is the purpose of our study this evening, to see if we can get a little closer to God through some part of his creation, considering this tree or plant, which is the vine. And so we read of these things in this way. And so it is, my brothers and sisters, we remember that on a Sunday morning when we partake of the bread and wine, we take the cup of wine, the one cup. And so God's saying, what is it? Is it just liquor? Is it just alcohol that you're drinking? Or are you, or does it make, help you to find the depth of me? Does it help you to come closer to me? Does it help to realize that I'm the creator of all things beautiful and great? And so there's this mold into the message of the scriptures when his son or the second Adam comes along, is associated and brought to our attention by drinking from the cup, because we drink of the wine which represents the sacrifice of the blood of his son. And we remember, do we not, that the wine came from the grapes. The grapes came from, as we know, from the vine. And the vine, as we know, as we shall see, is spoken of and represented by Jesus Christ, who was the true vine, and his God was the husbandman in that particular way. And we have to admit, all brothers and sisters have a favorite portion of the Bible to themselves. You talk to your brothers and sisters and say, what do you find the most enjoyable and helpful part of the scriptures? And they will immediately recall to that they have this special portion of the scriptures. They, as is popular to a lot of the people, would be Psalm 23. Some have Genesis 1, some Hebrews 11, Revelation 1. We all have a particular portion of the scriptures in this way. It's the same with the favorite readings. It's the same with the hymns. Some have favorite hymns. I don't know of anybody right now, but I know that some people have favorite hymns that they like to use quite often. And so it is in the, we remember in the history of the Christadelphians, there's been a popular portion of the scriptures that has been brought to the forefront so that we may be able to realize what God is doing through this branch, through this tree, the vine. Now, way back years ago with Dr. Thomas and C.C. Walker and all those, when they put together a magazine, discussing what they would use as the front page and what would they illustrate on the front page, they chose wisely the vine. I don't know whether you can see that. There we go. Or maybe it's the backup?
No, the top.
Okay, backup.
Right here.
Turn around.
Right here.
Oh, sorry.
There you go.
There you go. So I don't know.
Yeah, perfect.
Okay, so if you can see that, this is the magazine 1938. And so it was from the beginning of the development of this magazine, the Christadelphian magazine. This is the illustration of the front page. And on this, in this particular one, it's interesting, this particular one, December 1938, reading through it, there's a few interesting things One is that the ecclesia that I belong to in England, they put on a special effort. This will shock some of us regarding development or our success of preaching. In the year 1938 in Rugby, a special lecture was put on and they had 350 visitors. Now in those days, lectures and preaching was part of entertainment, but it's surprising that they had 350 visitors to that campaign. Also enclosed here, for those who are the history of the Bible, it records the death of Brother Janaway. But it's also interesting in this magazine that the Christendom office sent this to me. I thought it would be assisting me in my talk showing this picture. But also in there, there's the article and under the heading of Rainwater in Israel. And as we know, there was back in this particular time, there's a shortage of water in Israel, but they were discovered now the ability to make water, to sink wells, to develop water in this particular way. So when we went to Israel, just a matter of interest, when we went to Israel, we were driving through Israel, we went through the desert area, and then suddenly we came up to the high ridge and we looked down and it looked like the Garden of Eden. And there was all these powerful irrigation system. Water was going 24 hours a day and there was a beautiful vineyard and everything else. So I talked to one of the workers and I said, where do you get this water from? And he says, we don't know. I said, what do you mean you don't know? He said, there's an underground stream that we haven't been able to plumb. He said, but that's where the water come from. It's an unlimited supply of water. So we could only say, by the grace of God, this water was there in place to be used so that Israel, the land, could once again blossom as a rose and that there could be a vegetation. And there would be God preparing the land for his people to return to it. So in this particular way, then we have set forth here that Jesus Christ is the true vine, and we are the branches, with God being the husbandman. And we do remember that Israel, trying to keep in with the form of our talk this evening with Jesus, the true vine, and God, the husbandman. We also remember in this beginning that we have the seed to plant this vine in the pleasant land that God would select for them. And we know that the seed was the seed of Abraham. They were referred to in the scriptures quite often as the seed of Abraham, their father, referring to the oftentimes mentioned in this particular way. And so we have a lovely picture frame in our wall, which is a part of creation. And throughout the Bible, in your studies of the Bible, you will quickly recognize that the Bible is full of symbols and metaphors. And they're used in many particular ways, especially in prophecy and in the parables. And we know lots of parables. There's about 30 parables. And here's where we have symbols and metaphors in God's way and Jesus Christ's way of bringing a teaching necessary for our salvation. So you can recall many of the parables. We have the parable like the sower. We have the lost corn. We have the patch garments and all those other different ones. 30 parables or more. In the Old Testament, our thoughts cause us to remember many of these symbols and these metaphors in this way. When we go to Genesis 37, we have a powerful one there and a very, a little humorous in some way, but a powerful symbol and a metaphor when we're talking about of the seed of Abraham and we're talking at this particular time of Joseph. Because in Genesis chapter 37, you remember there we have the family of Jacob. Family of Jacob, and it says in verse 1 that Jacob dwelt in the land where his father was a stranger in the land of Canaan. And then he goes on to say, these are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren. And the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and with the sons of Zilpah, his father's wife. Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. Now Israel, the father, loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age. And we know what he did for him. He made him a coat of many colors. And then we read later on in this descript demonstration of a metaphor in this way. And he says, Joseph had a dream. And we know the dream. It's a little bit humorous, I always think, in one way. But he had this dream, and he says in verse 7, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf arose, stood upright, and behold, your sheaf stood round about and made obeisance to my sheaf. And his brethren said to him, shalt thou indeed reign over us, or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us? And they hated him yet the more for his dream. So there we have an illustration of a symbol or metaphor being used in that particular way. And so we have this given to us through that little illustration. Now, as we said in this magazine, we have this given to us, going back to this. We have the vine, we have the branches, we have the grapes, and the brethren wisely put the writing on this as a call for all brothers and sisters to chase after their God and to know him a lot better. So they wrote on the front page, the Christadelphian monthly magazine dedicated wholly to the hope of Israel. The ideas with a view to making ready a people prepared for the Lord. At that particular time, Brother John Carter, as some of us know, was the editor at that time. So it is the same message today for us. We are people of the Bible. We are of Israel. We are of not natural Israel as of Abraham, but we are of spiritual Israel, or we are spiritual Israelites. I always think that's a beautiful thought and a beautiful lesson to tell us, and a comforting one, that we have been grafted, which we'll talk about next week if the Lord will, that we've been grafted in to that vine in this beautiful way, grafted into it. So in this scripture, reading scriptures and remembering that we've spoken of God being a great creator, that he uses some of the things in his great creation to teach us a powerful lesson. And so in the Bible, we discover that there are three trees used in the scriptures in a symbolic way. There's the olive tree, there's the fig tree, and there's the vine. And we remember, do we not, that God seems to use it in a beautiful way. It's a simple, yet a powerful way. So when we remember in the beginning that one of the things that God took when, as we know, Adam and Eve digressed from God's ways, and they were finding their folly away, and God said that they would have to leave this environment and go out and to work out their salvation by the sweat of their brow. They would have to prove to him and show to him that they wanted to be a part of the time when people could go back to the Garden of Eden and dwell in a creation which was perfect. And so we remember that when Adam and Eve went out, that they would look back, and the thing that they would see would be, as we know, this sword that would be turning all different ways to protect the way, preserve the way for people to go back. And we remember, do we not, that the main testing ground for Adam and Eve was associated with the tree. Remember the tree that God told them of all the fruit, all the beautiful fruit and things of this area. You can have it. You can take of it. You can use it. You can enjoy it in this way. And so when we finish up in the book of Revelation, that this transformation of the use of a tree and symbolic again, in Revelation 11 verse 4, we have the two olive trees, or the witnesses to the existence of a true and living God who cares for all people. Now the ancient people of Israel, as we know, even today, they're a very arrogant and a very proud people. If we mix with them, they're very proud of their race. The question sometimes even today of the existence of the God of Abraham, for more reasons than one. But they boast that we have Abraham to our fathers.
Oh, what are you
going to tell me? Well, I see. Are we okay? Okay, but you've got a bit of interruption there, but it could be just the background, which is okay. But when we go to Matthew chapter 3, there we have them at that particular time boasting about their calling. Remember, Jesus Christ is now the true vine, is upon the earth, he's there for a purpose. And in Matthew chapter 3 and verse 5, we read this. We have John the Baptist come on the scene. All things moving forward in the preparation of the time when Israel, God's, the seed of Abraham, could be settled in a pleasant land and mature to the glory and the honor of the vineyard keeper. And in Matthew chapter 3, where John the Baptist comes on the scene, and we read in verse 5, he was so powerful in his preaching. He had this message of hope. The people had been longing for the time. They'd come out of that 400 period of time of the Maccabees. And now they were looking for something more established through their God. And the hope was there of a new and better way. So we read in verse 5 that then went out to him Jerusalem or Judea, and all the region round about Jordan, all the people that heard of this message, they were now, as David, thirsting after the presence and to know the God of their forefathers. And they were baptized of John in the Jordan, confessing their sins. But when he saw many of the Pharisees and Sadducees come to his baptism, he said unto them, O generation of vipers, who have warned you to flee from the wrath to come? Bring forth therefore fruits. Bring forth their fruit, if you are the branches of Abraham. Now he said in verse 9, and think not to yourself, don't be boastful, don't be arrogant, don't be proud. Think not to yourself, or within yourself, we have Abraham to our father. For I say unto you that your God, the God of Abraham, is able of these stones to raise up children unto Abraham. Now that would be a shocking declaration to these people. To, as it says in verse 7, to the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the scribes. Because Jesus said unto them, don't boast in this way, because in verse 10, he said, now also the axe is laid unto the root of the trees. Therefore, every tree which it bringeth not forth good fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire. So now he's introducing us, John the Baptist is introducing us, is to the progress report of what will happen to these people if they don't move from their wicked ways and their folly and in stepping aside from the ways of God. He says, you may be the by birth related to Abraham. He said, you may be privileged having the Moses and prophets sent unto you. You may be privileged that I have been sent of God to speak unto you, to bring you to Jesus Christ, your Messiah, that you've been looking forward to. But if you don't bring forth fruit worthy of the vineyard owner, if you bring sour grapes instead of sweet grapes that he can taste and enjoy, he said, then he would go further. Take the axe and lay it at the root of the trees. Therefore, every tree which bringeth forth not good fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire. So John's audience would understand, a lot of John's audience would understand that he was referring to them. Because they knew their scriptures. They knew the history of the vine in the Old Testament. They knew the promise of the coming of the Messiah. They knew all this, but they ignored it and would not accept it and would not change their ways. So John the Baptist says that what will happen is, he says, you as a people will be taken out of the scene, and a new set of people would come along who would fit into the being associated with Abraham and his promises, and they would be spiritual Israel. In Psalm, I like to go to Psalm 80. And in Psalm 80, as I've said before and I will say it again, I just thrive on the Psalms. And you may say, well, why are you directed that way, Brother Matt? I tell you the reason why I was, because Psalmist is a man who has a mind that I wish I could have a mind. A mind like that who was able to get close to his God. It's not an easy thing, brothers and sisters. And we are people force of habits. We every day we pretty well run our lives on the order of habit forming. And we should do this also with spiritual life. Each day should not go by with getting a little step closer to our God. And if we can do this, we develop into a beautiful creature, a spiritual creature who is close to the great creator, the great creator. And so automatically our life puts on a different form and a different way, and our thoughts are God-like. And if we do this, I'm sure that God looks down upon us and finds us favorable for his company. And so in Psalm 80, we have, as we know, another metaphor or a symbol here that the psalmist portrays God as the shepherd of Israel. Verse 1 of Psalm 80, give ear, O shepherd of Israel, thou that leadest Joseph like a flock. Association with Joseph again. That thou that dwellest between the cherubim shine. This is another portrait of this God dwelling dwelling between the cherubim, as we know, the glory that was manifested in the day when the tabernacle was in the midst of the people. And then he goes on to, to say in this way in verse 3, turn us again, O God, and cause thy face to shine, and we shall be saved. O Lord of hosts, how long wilt thou be angry against the prayer of thy people? Then he goes down to verse 7. It says, again, turn us again, O God of hosts, and cause thy face to shine, and we shall be saved. Thou hast brought a vine out of Egypt. Thou hast brought a vine out of Egypt. Thou hast cast out the heathen and planted it. Thou preparest room before it, and didst cause it to take deep root, and it filled the land. The hills were covered with the shadow of it, and the boughs that it was like the godly cedars. And then we see there, brother and sisters and young people, that the people of Israel recognized their fault, and they asked God to have mercy upon them. And then they use that term, turn us again, turn us again, turn us again. And so it is, we remember the language of the vineyard owner. He looks upon his vine. And one of the things he would say, how's the fruit? And he said, the, They've turned to become sour grapes that cannot be used. They will be crushed and put back into the earth. And so this is how the psalmist says and continues in that way. And in verse 8 he says, thou hast brought a vine out of Egypt. We know the history of that. Then we go into verse 14. Return, we beseech thee, O God of hosts. Look down from heaven and behold and visit this vine and the vineyard which thy right hand hath planted and the branch that thou madest strong for thyself. It is burned with fire. It is cut down. They perish at the rebuke of thy counsel. So these people of Israel recognize the association of this message, of this spiritual message that's coming out of their own vineyard and what has been planted. The vineyard which thy right hath planted. And they knew that they had been brought out of Egypt. They knew that God had taken them. They knew God had planted them in a pleasant land. The land was being prepared for them whilst they were in Egypt and were that ready for them to move into that area in which they could blossom forth and bring forth fruit to the honor and the glory of the vineyard over. So quickly, given emphasis to this, we remember that God had made a covenant with them. God had made a covenant. We know the covenant is an agreement that, as in today, it's made between two people, and that it has to be carried through to take advantage of that covenant. So in Deuteronomy chapter 5, and at verse 1 to 5, we read this. It says, and Moses called all Israel and said unto them, hear, O Israel, the statutes and the judgments which I speak in your ears this day, that you may learn them and keep them and do them. The Lord our God made a covenant with us in Horeb. The Lord made not this covenant with our father, but with us, even us who are all of us here alive this day. The Lord talked with you face to face in the mount, out of the midst of the fire. Remember last week with sometime in the exhortation we're talking about God speaking out of the fire. I stood between the Lord and you at that time to show you the words of the Lord, for you were afraid by reason of the fire and went not up into the mount. I am the Lord thy God, which brought thee out of the land of Egypt, the house of a bondage. John the Baptist preached to them. Jesus Christ would come on the scene and he would show to them in many beautiful ways that he was the true vine. The prophets of old were men who were chasing, not after a fantasy, they were chasing after that which was the truth. And we know Moses and the prophets, when the prophets came on the scene like Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, these men were on fire. These men knew that they had a mission to present to the people, which had to be given now in a powerful way that they would accept it, because there's a limited time in coming to God and finding God. And so in that beautiful, as we know, Isaiah was a very, as a lot of the prophets, was a very emotional man. He was very, he was a prophet like David, who had this language, godly language that I speak of. And so in Isaiah chapter 5, he says that, and maybe he had written songs about Israel and their position before their God. But in Isaiah chapter 5, he says this. This is Isaiah saying this. Now will I sing to my well-beloved a song of my beloved touching his vineyard. The people recognize this. Maybe he sung it, maybe he composed a song, and the people were called to sing this song. Now will I sing to my beloved a song of my beloved touching his vineyard. My well-beloved hath a vineyard in a very fruitful hill. Vineyard on a hill, all the advantages of taking of that of the sun at this time. And he says, and the the vineyard keeper did this. Verse 2, the love of God, just the same as I did to the people. And he fenced it about, already a pleasant land. He fenced it about. He gathered out the stones thereof. He planted it with the choicest vine. He built a tower so that he could watch for the enemy that would come in and break it, all the wild animals. He also made a wine press therein, and he looked that it should bring forth grapes, and it brought forth wild grapes. And now, inhabitants of Jerusalem and men of Judah, judge, I pray you, betwixt me and my vineyard. What could have been done more to my vineyard that I have not done it? Wherefore, when I looked that it should bring forth grapes, it brought forth wild grapes. And now go to, I will tell you what I will do to my vineyard. This, you could almost hear the change in the voice of the prophet, the change of the voice of God, as in the beginning of the song, which would be melodious, and now it breaks forth and expands, and it comes like a thunderbolt. Because in verse 5, he says, And now go to, I will tell you what I will do to my vineyard. I waited long enough for you to produce good fruit, sweet fruit, the right fruit. But all you do is producing sour because you've turned away. He continues with the proclamation. I will take away the hedge thereof. It shall be eaten. I will take away the hedge thereof, and it shall be eaten up, and break down the wall thereof, and it shall be trodden down. I will lay it waste. It shall not be pruned, nor digged, but there shall come up briars and thorns. I also command the clouds, they rain no rain upon it. For the vineyard of the Lord of hosts is the house of Israel, the men of Judah, the seed of Abraham, and it is a pleasant plant, or it started that way. He looked for judgment, behold oppression, for righteousness, behold I cry, and woe to them that join house to house, and so on in this language. And I give emphasis to through the prophet, what God said to the people. And I kind of smile when I read this, and because God said, what more can I do for you? You know, you could almost say, look what I did for you. 40 years. First of all, Abraham and your children, and I blessed you in so many ways. And for 400 years, I made preparation for you to go into a pleasant land. He said, I put you in Egypt so you could mature. The seed could mature to a vine. That with the land prepared for you, and I'm going to plant you in there. I've given you water this season, and I've given you all the things necessary to produce good fruit, and you haven't done it. How much am I going to do for you? I've done everything for you except produce as fruit for me to taste. And this is the preaching. This is the preaching of Isaiah, who is speaking on God's behalf. And it's spoken there in a way, as we observed in more than one country, that the vineyard, when it is put into action and developed in that way, that many times the vine was the vines were built on a hill. And that's what it says in that Isaiah, in this particular chapter here. He says in verse 1, my well-beloved hath a vineyard in a very fruitful hill. They built on a hill. So we know that Israel developed as a vineyard in Jerusalem especially. And Jerusalem is built, as most of us know, on seven hills. And so there would be this, an abundance of fruit. The farmer today, as the day as it was then, would build his vineyard on the side of the hill, its branches reaching heavenward. I'd just like to go just a couple of things here, just to give emphasis in the message that we're speaking of at this time regarding the vine. So we'll go to Jeremiah chapter 2 and verse 6. We go to Jeremiah 2 verse 6, and it says here, Moreover, the word of the Lord came to me, saying, here again, God's appeal to Isaiah, as it was to John the Baptist, as it was to Jesus Christ, go and preach to the people that they may change, that they may turn and bring forth fruit in abundance for me to have the pleasure of tasting of it. Chapter 2 of Jeremiah, moreover the word of the Lord came to me saying, go, cry in the ears of Jerusalem, the vineyard is, saying, thus saith the Lord God, I remember thee, the kindness of thy youth, when as a seed you were maturing to develop to be a full vine. I remember thee, the kindness of thy youth, the love of thine espousal, when thou wentest after me in the wilderness and the land that was not sown. Israel was holiness unto the Lord, and the first fruits of his increase, and all that devour him shall offend. Evil shall come upon them, saith the Lord. And so we remember, do we not, that what happened at this particular time. So we can go to verse 20 and continue in this way, reading from verse 20. It says, for of old time I have broken thy yoke, I have burst thy bands. Thou saidest, I will not transgress, when upon every high hill I built vineyards. It didn't say that. It says, when upon every high hill and on every green tree thou wanderest playing the harlot. Yet I had planted thee. Remember this, my people. Remember this in your folly. In the beginning, in your youth, it says there, when you were a seed, verse 21, I planted thee a noble vine. A noble vine, holy, a right seed. How then art thou turned into this degenerate plant of a strange vine unto me? For thou wash thee with nitre, and take thee much soap, yet thine iniquity is marked before me, saith the Lord God. So, what God said, how much more can I do for you? I watched over you while you were as a seed, now maturing. I watched over you, and I saw this iniquity coming into your midst, and it was likened to the, as we know, the branches would be covered with this frost and this stuff that would bring harm to the branches. And he said there, as they did in England as a boy, I remember, that they would take soap and water and they would literally wash the branches. There's fungus on the branches, and the fungus were eating branches and possibly killing the fruit. And so, as in the neighbors, as a boy, I would see these neighbors, as I saw in a silly way, going and washing the branches with soap and water. So we continue in this way, and I see we're pretty well coming to the end, but we continue next week with the, speaking about the new vine, and we'll bring it into there, introduce there. But as we move out of the Old Testament into the time of the Maccabees, and then we go into the New Testament. And that becomes an interesting thing, because we remember, do we not, that God said that if you don't mature, I'll cut you down with an axe. And we remember, do we not, then, when we have a history progress given to us in the Maccabees, that we have these different empires. We have the Medo-Persians, and we have the Greeks, and then we have the Romans come along, all during this particular time, the 400 years and so. We have this Roman Empire come along, and we remember, we not, that they were opposed to the Jews, and we remember as to what extent they caused the Jews to suffer. The Jews suffered maybe during the Maccabees at that time more than any other time in history, if you follow through on that. And then we remember to follow on with this, that when the Romans came, as we know, opposed to the Jews, other nations have done in our lifetime. Remember, do we not, that they dispersed the Jews from their own land into seven other countries, and there they wanted to make sure that the Jews wouldn't return to plant, that there wouldn't be a vineyard again. So we're told that they sold the earth, so that nothing could be grown into it. So there you see, my brothers and sisters, that this God that we worship, this God that we believe in, this God that we believe, if we walk right before him, will allow us to be entering into a new creation. Because as when we go into a study next week, all being well, we will see that because we acknowledge God as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that he wants to bring all people. That's what it says in the Bible, that God has no desire that any man should perish, but all should come, have the opportunity to come unto him and live. So as we follow the teachings of the apostles, Paul and others give emphasis to the fact that we, if we accept and become branches of the true vine, then we know in the that we shall become spiritual Israelites. And when the earth returns to the way that God wanted it in the beginning, like a Garden of Eden, then if we chase after our God to know him more, then in our chase we shall find the kingdom of God.